Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. In the past, I've spoken about books I've read that I think you might want to know about, and I've mentioned also that I collect some books. There's certain kinds of books I collect. I've got a huge collection of dictionaries, for instance. The OED, of course, is the king of them all, but it's not the most interesting one. I've got some old dictionaries, for instance, and dictionaries of odd terms. But today we're going to talk about, I also like to collect old books on driving. Now, when I was pulling this off the shelf, I noticed it was next to a book on The Way of a Man with a Maid, which is sexology for men and boys. Now, we will get to this book at a later date, because I suspect that we'll have to ask the young folk to leave the room because it discusses very, very sensitive topics. But the funny thing about sportsmanlike driving, which was put out by the American Automobile Association and is copyrighted 1948, is it gives us a great insight into what driving was like when spoken about by extremely conservative people. And I'm not talking politically conservative. I'm just talking about the people who they probably made fun of back then. So, for instance, with such a large percentage of our citizens driving cars, it is time for all of us to be concerned about the way people learn to drive. Are most people well prepared to drive by the time they get their driving licenses? Let's examine the poll. And they took a poll as to where'd you learn to drive? And 3,000 people they polled said, and this is 38% of the poll, about 10,000 people were quizzed. They were self-taught. Now, if that's true, I weep for their generation. About 29% were taught by a friend, and 350 were taught by an auto salesman. That's a car seller who's working for the sale. Want to buy a car? I don't know. I don't know how to drive. I'll teach you. Buy the car. And then of this, 10% were taught in a driving course, driver's ed. So obviously driver's ed became a bigger thing before it was then disbanded and got done away with as has been in many states, or it's now, you know, often it's something you have to pay for out of your own money. There are discussion tips at the end of every chapter of Sportsmanlike Driving, third edition. And one of them is, can you think of any other single invention that has so speeded up the tempo of American civilization as has the automobile? But better, cite and discuss A, when the automobile is a civic liability, B, when it is a civic asset. Can you defend the proposition that it is the driver who determines which is which? You better take your car seriously, young man. Let's talk about the eyes of a driver. Should a person with 20/40 vision drive half as fast as a person with 20/20 vision? Hey, I didn't know there's going to be math on this. Discuss the advantages of a wide field of vision. Discuss the disadvantages of driving blindfolded. Physical handicaps are things you should know about, such as licensing programs should weed out persons with certain major disabilities for which there are no satisfactory corrections or compensations. People who suffer from the following disabilities should be prevented from driving cars: epilepsy, mental illness, paralysis, syphilis, heart trouble. I am not making this up, people. So I guess, and I haven't got time to read all of this to make sure that, you know, I'm extrapolating this correctly, but I'm guessing that they're suggesting that perhaps when you take a driver's test, you should also be tested for STDs. Because if you got the one that means you can't drive, well, you know. And by the way, if you're paralyzed, you shouldn't be allowed to drive either, according to the book, Sportsmanlike Driving. They do talk about stopping distances in the driver. And they do also talk about have the members of your group join hands to form a chain. Have a leader in the chain press the hand of the person next to him. Have each one relay the squeeze to his neighbor as soon as he receives it. In fact, mark the spot where I said relay the squeeze to his neighbor and tell everyone they should watch that for the fun part of this video. With a stopwatch or the second hand of an ordinary watch, measure the time it takes the squeeze to travel around the chain. Divide the time in seconds by the number of people in the chain to find the average touch reaction time per person. I have no idea what they're getting at here other than they were hoping that boys might read this book and go, hey, I just figured out how to pick up chicks. Secure a break reaction detonator and make stopping distance tests at 20 and 30 miles per hour in a place where there's no other traffic. I assume you should if you've got a break reaction detonator, whatever that might be. I don't know. And then there's math problems. If an average parking space of 20 feet is being used by each car, show how many parked cars the driver will have to pass from the time he perceives danger ahead and decides to make an emergency stop until he can bring his car to a complete stop if his reaction time is 1 second and his car is moving at the rate of 40 miles per hour. I half expected to hear that there's a train coming the opposite direction and they both left Wichita at the same time or something. And then there's a couple of them here. Bad risks as drivers. All babies are normally self-centered. They have not learned how to be unselfish. They have not learned how to share. They are good examples of the perfect egotist. I think they're getting it. We shouldn't let babies drive, but I'll continue. As people grow out of babyhood, they learn that self is really not the center of the universe. Says who? You haven't been in my universe, buddy. If they develop normally, they become more social. That is, their interests spread out and away from self. And they see things more and more in the light of public good. They acquire social attitudes. I'm telling you right now, I just realized this thing. This book is communist and socialist propaganda being published, 1948, being pushed on the American public, probably by the Reds. I'm assuming that's what they're talking about here. They're saying, unless you're a baby, you should be doing everything for the public good. And of course, I'm joking. And then, with his normal psychological makeup, the baby would make the worst possible driver. Yeah, and also he can't touch the pedals. You got to be able to reach the pedals and see over the dashboard. I would suggest that any living being, whether it's a sloth, whether it's one of those capybaras that have that attitude problem in South America, or if it's a lemur, or if it's a human, any animal or living being that cannot reach the pedals and see over the dashboard should not be allowed to drive, including babies. So babies should not be allowed to drive. The baby would consider nothing but his own interest and immediate desires. Yeah, and the baby probably doesn't understand traffic laws either. The babyish adult makes a miserable driver for the same reason. So all you got to do is look at a baby driver and say, okay, an adult who acts like a baby would be acting like the baby driver when driving the car. Therefore, by the way, there's no author listed here. This was written by a committee at an American Automobile Association. He, the babyish adult, has never outgrown his babyish egotism. He may have had the kind of childhood training that makes grown-up persons act like babies, but on the highway, this egotistical, babyish type of person drives by pulling out of line to the confusion of others, stops or makes turns without signaling, makes turns from improper traffic lanes, cuts in too closely, boasts of breaking traffic laws, chiseling in out of turn, demanding the right of way, using influence and pull for ticket fixing. That's good. He double parks for his own convenience. He parks his car so it takes two parking spaces. He pulls out from the curb without signaling or looking for approaching cars. And he is one of the mere examples of bad drivers, because there's also the show-off who's driving his two-tone convertible and looking back and waving at the young lady here, who, she sees him, but she's not impressed. And then, of course, we do have the baby blowhorn, who is an actual baby and somehow is larger than the adult in the other car, again, driving a convertible And he's got a cow catcher on the front, and he's just plowing through and killing people. And they suggest that that's not a good way to drive either. So there is a lot of useful information in a book like this, including a graphic illustration using horses to show you that an 18-horsepower horse would be this big. You'd have an 85-horsepower horse would be this big. And then, of course, nowadays you've got the 150-horsepower horse, and he's this big. So, again, I am fascinated by archaic driving books and manuals, as I am with the other archaic manuals, which we'll get to some other time. But these are hilarious. You know, once in a while, and I've talked about urban legends before, you'll hear these ones about like, oh yeah, it turns out that back in 1903, to drive an automobile on the streets of this one particular town, you had to have a man walking out in front with a beacon, even during daylight, and clanging a bell and screaming at the top of his lungs, you know, car a coming, car a coming. And no one can ever show me the statutes that say that. Even the old statutes would be on old books someplace. So I'm sure that some of those may have existed, but I've never seen one yet. But again, like I said, this right here is just from post-war, you know, post-World War II. And it's just kind of funny to read the archaic ways they looked at driving and how we really shouldn't let babies drive. So there you have it. Sportsmanlike driving brought to you by the AAA. Questions or comments, put them below. Let's talk to you later.